Hey, folks, thanks for tuning back in to the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. It is time for the Week 13 Rewind, and you know what? I've been hearing about so many coaches getting fired. This is going to be the You're Hired edition, so I'm going to hire my usual partner for these Rewind podcasts, Mr. Tom Fornelli. Tom, would you like a coaching job? Because I hear a lot are available right now.
It depends on the school situation and the money chip, but I would like to mention to any athletic directors out there who might be listening that I have won multiple national championships on my PlayStation 3, and I know what it takes to get to the top of the mountain.
And you might be the type of candidate, Tom, that can inject the energy that that a program could use, because we have today was Colorado, NC State, Auburn officially firing Chizik, and Boston College getting rid of Frank Spaziani. We are just really getting started early in silly season. And a lot of people will say that in today's coaching environment, you know, why wait? Of all of the different coaching changes in these first couple days or last couple days, which ones have stood out to you and which ones have surprised you the most?
The Tom O'Brien one. I think that one caught everybody off guard just because NC State's coming off a 7-5 year, and he's done pretty well at NC State. So that caught me off guard. The John Embry firing caught me a little off guard, only because it was two seasons. But it's like I also completely understand why Colorado would want to make that move, because Colorado football has been very bad for a very long time now. Or not a very long time, but I mean, with the Dan Hawkins years into the Embry years, it's been a rough few years in Boulder. The least surprising one, I think, for everybody would have to be G. Chizik, because I think we all knew that was happening for the last month. I think we could say the same about Frank Spaziani in Boston College. We all realized that was coming. And one that was mildly surprising was Danny Hope, because you thought definitely a month ago he was on his way out, but then Purdue won 3 games to finish the year and got to 6-6, so it's going to a bowl game for the second straight year under Hope. So you thought maybe he had a chance to save his job, but nope. That's not the case.
Of all the, you mentioned the NC State firing of Tom O'Brien. Debbie Yao automatically scratched off one of the first names we thought was going to be in the mix there. James Franklin, former coach in waiting when Yao was the athletic director at Maryland. Of course, very successful at Vanderbilt. Do you think that another job will pop up? Because certainly Franklin is considered one of the top young coaches in the game. And if a job like NC State, you know, if they're going to scratch him off so early, do you think that there is another one, you know, whether it be an Arkansas, a Tennessee, a Kentucky, is there another SEC job that you could see Franklin leaving for? Or do you think that NC State, you know, quickly backing away says something about his commitment to Vanderbilt?
Well, first of all, can you imagine how sore the hands of James Franklin and his agent are after today? They've been high-fiving for the last 15 hours. I do think that James Franklin's name is definitely going to come up in just about every coaching search out there, because what he's done at Vanderbilt really is remarkable. I mean, the Commodores have won 8 games. They might win 9 games. And then, you know, if you look, Tennessee's got a job opening. Kentucky's got the job opening. And if you're Tennessee and you've seen what Franklin's done at Vanderbilt and you haven't been able to get a coach into Knoxville in the last few years to be able to turn that program around, how could you not consider Franklin? I mean, I know it's going to your rival and it seems kind of, you know, bad to go to Vanderbilt for a head coach, not just a perception amongst maybe some old school fans, but still, if you're Tennessee, how the hell would you not consider Franklin? If you're Kentucky, why would you not consider Franklin? He's winning at Vanderbilt in the SEC consistently. So, I mean, I think any school would be happy to have him, but like you said, I don't know if any school can get him, because the fact that he seemed out of the NC State running so quick makes me think that he really is committed to staying at Vanderbilt. I think Vanderbilt's made it pretty clear recently that they're committed to him, too.
Yeah, you heard his name pop up initially in a lot of these, but I think that you're absolutely right. I imagine that we will hear an announcement from James Franklin and the school he will be smiling and taking pictures with will be Vanderbilt, as he likely signs another as he signs what I imagine to be a lucrative contract extension. But
he will get so much money, he will change his last name to Vanderbilt, and his first name will be the Commodore.
The Commodore of Vanderbilt?
Yes.
All right, let's take it back. I apologize for getting us started off track, but clearly, you know, this is the business. As soon as the on-field action is done, it's right to settling the off-field scores. But looking back at a thrilling rivalry Saturday, and really the full weekend started with TCU knocking off Texas on Thursday on Thanksgiving, and winding up with the number one team in the nation going on the road to the Coliseum. Tom, you grew up rooting for the Irish in Chicago. What does this feel like right now to have Notre Dame playing for the national championship, or pretty much set in stone they will be playing for the national championship in Miami come January? How does it feel? You know, tap into some of your fandom and let me know what you're thinking.
You know, honestly, as a fan, I don't really think it's sunk in yet, because just from the fan perspective, I pretty much gave up on this program of ever being, you know, in the national title picture again probably about 5-6 years ago. So the fact that just that they're playing in the title game, it really, it's like, oh, it's like, wow, Notre Dame is number one. Holy crap. But at the same time, it's like, I don't think it's really going to sink in for me personally, just as a fan, until the game's actually being played in Miami. Now, as far as just watching college football this year, I'm not all that surprised, because Notre Dame's been pretty good all this year. And while I thought, you know, that they were, when it was Notre Dame, Oregon, and Kansas State were the undefeateds, I thought Notre Dame was the most likely to lose. That was before Matt Barkley got hurt. And while Max Wittig really showed that he has an absolute cannon last night, and USC is going to be just fine with him at quarterback the next few years, it's just, there's no way I expected him to come in at his very first start and beat Notre Dame. That against that defense. So I'm not surprised that they won last night. I'm not surprised that they're number one. And holy crap, Notre Dame is number one and playing for the national title.
Well, it was the one game everybody was sitting around waiting for. And it was, like you said, you know, credit Max Wittig. That boy has a cannon, and he sat back there and he made a couple of big boy throws that raised some eyebrows. But you know, in the end, it's just too disciplined, too grinding, just the way that Notre Dame just sort of has worked their way through every single one of these 12 wins all season. I, you know, a lot of credit to Brian Kelly. This is one of the best coaching jobs that we've seen across the nation this season. And certainly to have this team that started the season undefeated, you know, playing in Dublin, now here they are, the last undefeated team, along with the Ohio State Buckeyes, who, by the way, got zero mention on that BCS countdown show. Did you see that?
Well, yeah, but that's because they're not eligible for the BCS, so they don't exist at the ESPN.
That's where do they stand in this? We talked a little bit about, would they be deserving of an AP number one ranking? They're currently sitting at number four in the AP standings, of course, not ranked in the coaches poll. How'd you feel about that last game against Michigan, and sort of where this Ohio State team deserves to be amongst these last teams?
I think that if they were eligible, the AP would probably have them about number two. I don't think I would have them ranked higher than Notre Dame, even if they were eligible. But I think realistically, as far as just when you compare the teams, I think they're ranked about right, because Ohio State's been very good this year, but I don't know if I consider them better than Florida or if I consider them better than Alabama. I do think they're better than Georgia, though. But it's just yesterday's win, it was just kind of more the same with Ohio State. The defense played well enough. The offense, you know, it struggled at times, but it also made plays when it had to, make big plays. Braxton Miller, Corey Brown. So it's just, oh, and Carlos Hyde, of course. That's he's been the unsung hero about that entire Ohio State offense. Braxton Miller gets a lot of the pub, but Carlos Hyde has been great as a running back for the Buckeyes this year, especially since they came into the season with so many questions at running back, with Jordan Hall being injured and so on. But it's just, they're a very solid team. And what's scary is they finished 12-0 this year, and I don't think that team is really as good as it's going to be under Urban Meyer. Because the defense was good, but the defense wasn't great. There's a lot of holes in that defense that I think Meyer's going to improve while he's there. That offense is only going to get better with another year in the system, and Meyer's going to unleash a little more now that he has the entire offseason to work with them, like Miller growing, and most of those skill players are coming back. You know, Ohio State has a very easy schedule next year if you look at it. I mean, they could go 12-0 again next year and be playing for a national title pretty quickly.
Do you think that that's a realistic expectation?
I don't think you should put that expectation on them to start the year because, I mean, they did have some close calls this year. But, I mean, it's Ohio State. I think generally they go into every season thinking at worst Big Ten Rose Bowl, at best national title. So I think that's not going to be any different next year, especially with Urban Meyer starting 12-0. The expectations are just going to be sky high again.
Speaking of the Rose Bowl, it seems as though we got a little bit of what we expected when it comes to Stanford and UCLA. UCLA came out with a little bit of a bland attack. Stanford got the win they needed, setting up a rematch up ahead in the Pac-12 title game. The game will be played at Stanford. Were you thinking at all looking at this Stanford team? Because I've been thinking, you know, the what ifs sort of as you run through, especially looking over the last like 10 plus games. Stanford, what if Kevin Hogan had played the entire season? Because you and I both sort of identified Nunez as a big question mark and certainly a liability. And I don't know if Hogan maybe even was ready or if that's a, you know, hindsight is 20/20 situation. But you look at, you know, the loss earlier in the season. You've got the Notre Dame game, which, you know, did Stephen Taylor get in? Did he not? That, of course, changes Notre Dame's season. That changes Stanford's season. And I think that this Cardinal team, even though they're number 8 in the BCS standings, you know, I do not find them undeserving of a potential Rose Bowl spot. If they beat UCLA, I'm not going to be like, oh, man, Oregon deserves to be there, because Oregon's probably going to get to have their say in the Fiesta Bowl. And Stanford's probably been one of my favorite teams to watch here in the last couple weeks.
Yeah, Oregon had its chance against Stanford and failed. Yeah, I was going to say, when you asked about Kevin Hogan, I was going to say, what if Stephen Taylor's forward progress hadn't been stopped? Now, Stanford is definitely a team I think it surprised people without how well, it surprised me with how well they played this year. And, I mean, I'm not surprised they're ranked as high as they are now seeing them play. But, I mean, if you look at the teams that are at the top of the BCS right now, you got Notre Dame, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, LSU, South Carolina. These are all teams, and along with Stanford, that are very, very good, play very good defense, very solid on defense, and have strong power running games. It's a formula that's working. And Stanford uses it, and Stanford's very good at it. So while I am surprised that the Cardinals didn't still get this year, it's like maybe we shouldn't be, because they have a formula, they follow it, they execute it, and they've got beasts on both the offensive and defensive lines. Like, if you remember their recruiting class before this year in February, that offensive line they brought in was insane, so it's not like that's going to be getting any worse. So this is a Stanford team that, as long as that coaching staff stays there and they keep following this formula, I don't think it's going anywhere.
Do you think, because with David Shaw, obviously you're going to have the temptation of the NFL likely at some point. You got to imagine Chip Kelly right there, obviously the temptation of the NFL. You know, what is the outlook? Is there going to be a chance for Rich Rod or maybe the Jim Mora? Is the South going to sort of rise up and take the conference back? Because the Pac-12 still, it finishes just as fascinating as it started, where we don't really feel like, you know, anything is necessarily predictable. I mean, Stanford, I thought Oregon was a lock for the national championship game that we could get going BCS at large Fiesta Bowl. UCLA, I figured that they might be able to give USC a scare. I did not expect them to have the Pac-12 South locked up in locked up headed into week 13. Where are you seeing that conference going into 2013?
Well, I think a lot of it, like you said, does depend on coaching changes. I don't know if David Shaw is itching to go, but I mean, there's been plenty of rumors surrounding it. You know, if you ask some people, Chip Kelly was very close to going last year. So I wouldn't be shocked if Chip Kelly took an NFL job this offseason. I'm not expecting it, but if it happened, I mean, you'd have to think that would have a pretty big impact on Oregon's program. I mean, it also depends who do they bring in to replace it, because you could say just, you know, promote the offensive coordinator, but when you watch Oregon and you follow that program, it's a pretty distinctive that Chip Kelly is the brain behind, you know, he's the one calling the plays. He's the one who's designing the offense. It's his offense. So whoever replaced him, will they have the same kind of command of the Oregon offense that Kelly had? Will it be the same attack? So if Kelly left, I think the power would probably shift in the north to Stanford, but I also do see the South getting strong in the future, because like you said, with Rich Rod at Arizona, the Wildcats were very good this year. They were better than I thought they'd be in Rodriguez's first year. I thought it would take a little more time to get that in place down there. UCLA definitely seems to be on an upward trend. And USC is not going to be 7-5. That's the exception to the rule. USC is going to be a 10-win team more often than not. Whether it's with Lane Kiffin or if they get somebody else in there, USC will be back to being a Pac-12 South power in the Pac-12 power. So, yeah, it could change, but it all depends on the coaching.
All right. I'm going to pull myself back to on-field because I realize we keep drifting away, and I apologize for that. And to the
our
listeners.
Our brains are just flooded with coaching right now.
Yes.
We can't help it.
Yeah, we can't help it. We're recording this on Sunday, by the way, so that flurry of announcements literally is fresh within the last hour, so we apologize at that. All right, Tom, let's go here. Of all of the traditional rivalries that we saw across Week 13, which one lived up to your expectations as far as, you know, the contest, the rivalry? What was your favorite game of the weekend?
Alabama and Auburn. No, I didn't see much of the Oklahoma State game, but I wish I had, just from what I've heard about it and looking through the box scores and everything. I wish I'd had more time to actually watch that game, because that looked like a whole pile of fun. The Michigan-Ohio State game was good, although, I mean, it was a little sloppy, but I think anytime Michigan and Ohio State get together, it's generally, I enjoy it. But if I'm going to pick one, it would be the Florida-Florida State game, just because Florida finally put the last month behind them of playing terrible football. It came back, and all of a sudden the Gators were the team that we saw at the beginning of the year before that Georgia loss, that we were all like, you know, the Gators might just be winning the whole thing. That was the team that showed up in Tallahassee yesterday, and when the Gators play like they do, like they did on Saturday night, that's a team that could probably beat anybody in the country pretty handily.
I like to, when I watch Matt Elam and John Bostic out on the field, and the way that it's almost like human bumper cars. Like they're those guys in bumper cars that start off on one side and just go as fast as they can in a direct line, and they're just so athletic and so great at making plays in space that they get out there and they just rock people. And it's, you know, as the game spreads out and more offenses are trying to get players out in space, having guys on that defense that aren't going to get shaken. And Florida State has athletes, and they were doing a great job of wrapping up, a great job of getting out to the perimeter, flying to the ball. And it was just, you know, I walked in very confident that Florida State was going to win that game. And, you know, it was there were a lot of runs, a lot of swings. But, man, when the Gators were able to really clamp down on Florida State's offense, they ran off 24 points in a row. There was a last gimme touchdown in garbage time. But the way that they closed that out, I mean, that was winning football. And I hate that sounds like John Gruden. I hate that. That sounds like winning football.
The football player right here.
but, you know, I was impressed. I was very, very impressed. And we spent too much time laughing at Florida for, like, the previous couple weeks because that was absolutely deserving of a top three team in the nation right there.
Do you remember the it was an arcade game? I think it was called NFL Blitz.
Like, yeah, of course I remember NFL.
Yeah, games. Where you know the fact was, you know, you were just destroying everybody on every play. It was like 5-on-5 or whatever, and everybody got killed. That's Matt Elam playing football. Matt Elam is the NFL Blitz of college football safeties. He's just hitting everything in sight as absolutely hard as he can hit it. Teammate, opponent, inanimate object, whatever it is, he he's trying to knock it to next week.
Yeah.
And I love him for it.
No, absolutely, no doubt. The Georgia absolutely laying the wood to Georgia Tech. South Carolina gets some inspired play from Dylan Thompson. They beat Clemson 27-17. Really perfect that Steve Spurrier was able, for as much smack as he's talked and as much fun as he's injected into the South Carolina-Clemson rivalry, it really is perfect that he becomes the program's winningest coach. He got his 65th win as the South Carolina head coach. He got it at the other Death Valley against Dabo Swinney. And it was that was another game, man, where a team that I'd kind of turned my back on a little bit just comes out there. Devin Taylor and Jadeveon Clowney. I almost wish Clowney could go pro right now because he set.
I want him for one more year down here.
That's true. He set a record for Clemson Memorial Stadium, Death Valley, since I think World War II when they began keeping the statistic. He had 4.5 sacks, and no individual for Clemson or the opponent has ever had that many sacks in Death Valley. So, yet another feather in the cap for a phenomenal defensive end, certainly one of the best in the nation.
Is the ACC ever going to beat the SEC?
Well, you got to remember, NC State got it started when they lost to Tennessee, the same Tennessee that went 0-8 in SEC play.
And see what happens when you lose to Tennessee, Tom O'Brien?
Yeah, good.
The Vols are coach killers.
I'm trying to think. Well, Florida State beat Florida last year. South Carolina beat Clemson. Georgia Tech will beat Georgia from time to time. And Wake, when before Franklin came, Wake had a little bit of their way with Vanderbilt.
Can I just say that whole Wake Forest Vanderbilt rivalry is just one that I don't understand?
That's okay.
I feel like that's got to be the most polite rivalry. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you.
The two of them probably sit and have tea together. This is a jolly game. It's like, I don't know why they have English accents, but they do. This is a jolly old game, chap. Don't you agree?
I don't know that they're in old English times. Just eating tea and crumpets and
I picture this game being played in the English countryside. I think it fits.
Vanderbilt and Wake Forest actually play polo, Tom. I don't know if you knew this, but it's
after the game they go on a fox hunt.
I'll stand up for this. It's been really interesting because oftentimes both teams are right on the verge of bowl eligibility. That's one underrated piece of excitement about that rivalry is that more often than not, one of the two teams is like at 5 or 6 wins and needs that game in order to be bowl eligible. Sometimes it's been Wake Forest getting the win on Saturday. This past Saturday, it was Wake Forest not getting the win. Another part of the aforementioned 4-0 sweep the SEC pulled on the ACC. Let's talk about our friend Johnny Football. Our Chris Houston, Heisman pundit, CBSSports.com Heisman expert. He wrote it, and it seems all but set. I mean, everyone seems to have anointed Johnny Manziel as the Heisman front runner, and with no more competition left between now and the Heisman Trophy presentation on December 8th. The ballots will be due, I think, at the end of this week. You giving a thumbs up to the possible Heisman Trophy winner?
I think it's going to happen unless he royally screws up when he actually speaks to the media tomorrow, which is happening. Johnny Manziel, the silence will be broken in a teleconference on Monday. But I don't think there's anything that could change it unless Colin Klein just had. But is the voting in before this Saturday or is it after Saturday?
I think
if Colin Klein has a ginormous game against Texas, maybe, because like Kirk Herbstreit mentioned in the broadcast of Notre Dame USC last night, the AARP voters, as he called them, kind of just, you know, I'm never going to give a freshman my Heisman vote. But I don't. Compared to all the straw polls, and you know, Chris's straw poll has been pretty damn accurate the last few years. I'm pretty sure Manziel's going to win it. Yes.
And you like that Are you?
Oh yeah, I think. I mean, the Heisman, it seems, has become like kind of flavor of the weekish in each season. But if you just look at the stats, just because we didn't like most of the country didn't know who Manziel was until a few weeks ago, that doesn't mean he hasn't had the best stats all damn year. And he does. He's got stats that are comparable to every other quarterback candidate or better than them in just about every major meaningful statistic. So, yeah, I definitely think he deserves it.
Yeah, when you start busting out like the Trump card in the Johnny Manziel Heisman conversation is when you show that he has better numbers than Cam Newton or Tim Tebow had in the seasons when they won the Heisman. And then you put those statistics out there, you look at what he's been able to do, and if you want to talk about best all around. And I completely understand. I hope Manny Te'o gets an invitation. I hope he is a finalist. It was great for him to get an interception in that USC game as far as, your quote-unquote Heisman resume.
He also broke up another touchdown that was going to Marquise Lee.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Man, he's really good in pass coverage.
He's really good at football.
His whole football thing. Oh, yeah. But like the Manziel, he is – sitting there with Texas A&M, their first season in SEC play, it's a 10-win season, 6-2 in the SEC West. If you want to back up and not even just focus on numbers, if you want to talk about, significance, what you mean to a team, what you mean to a program, as far as impact, that's like RG3-esque. If people were going to give Griffin credit for putting Baylor football on the map, then I think you got to say the same thing for Manziel this year.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like you're saying, A&M coming in. Nobody expected A&M to be this good its first year in the SEC, let alone in the SEC West. And speaking of teams, joining the SEC, how do you think Missouri was feeling yesterday when it's down 42-0 to Texas A&M and it's saying to itself, not only can we not beat the SEC powers, we can't even beat the team that came with us from the Big 12.
God. Man, the Missouri's got... Do you think they would have been better off if they had joined the Big Ten, or what's
I think it depends on what you want by better off. I think Missouri would have had a better chance to win more regularly in the Big Ten than it will the SEC, but being part of the SEC does bring a certain, an ash, I think, is good for the program. And I think they're fine in the SEC. It's just I don't think you're going to be seeing Missouri in many BCS bowl games or in the playoff in the future because of it.
What's the of all the, whether it's the final Big East games, the final Big 12 games, we got the MAC championship, Big Ten, of all the conference championships and the games that we have in this week 14, which ones are you most looking forward to?
I think Georgia-Alabama is the obvious choice, but so I'm not going to use that. But if we're not going to use that, I'm going to say the MAC title game, because if Kent State wins, from what they were saying, like if Kent State wins, it has a good chance of being in a BCS bowl game. But to me, it's like I don't see why Kent State should be ranked as high as it is, and Northern Illinois has no shot because everything Northern Illinois has done has been just as impressive as Kent State. So I just think that considering it's the MAC championship game, so there's MACtion involved, and it's also two ranked teams from the MAC that are both 11-1. I think that's going to be just a really fun, exciting game, and I can't wait to see it. Jordan Lynch, Dree Archer, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And like Matt Hinton tweeted earlier today, our buddy on the blog, the winning coach gets to either accept or pass on the Purdue job.
The Purdue's got to get, probably going to go MAC is...
But you know what? Here's my off the wall. Gene Chizik to Purdue.
Oh, I think that's a rumor that we should start.
That's just my off the wall. I think Gene Chizik ends up at Purdue.
No, what else? I told you, NC State Athletic Director Debbie Yao says we're going to bring in Alabama talent, and that means Gene Chizik's coming to NC State. Oh, man. That would make me so – that would be another one that I'd be happy about.
I totally understand why Auburn did it, but Gene Chizik won a damn national title 2 years ago. Okay, he's looking for a job, Chip. This is what it's come to in college football. I mean, I understand that he's 33-19 overall at Auburn, but he's only 19-19 without Cam Newton. But the damn man won a national title 2 years ago, and he's unemployed.
Unbelievable.
College football, everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
In Alabama, especially. And also, I mean, think about Auburn looking for the replacement down there. You got NCAA investigation, apparently, that's going on into the program. And you're in the same state as Alabama and Nick Saban, which is an absolute juggernaut right now. What? How much money does it take to get you to take that job at the moment?
A lot. I think that what I would do is I'd go there.
They just fired a head coach 2 years after he won a national title, Chip. Keep that in mind, too.
Yeah, I think that's a great opportunity for a Sun Belt coach, like an upstart, like a Rick Stockstill, or maybe if you go to Mark Hudspeth. I think
Taggart.
Willie Taggart, for sure. I think that's the – you go for a coach who who has the experience in the Southeast, but you know, otherwise would have probably stayed at a Sun Belt school, tried to continue building, and he basically takes Auburn on as a rebuilding project, the same way which they would have taken on the same attitude that you would have as you approach a Sun Belt program. I think that's what you got to do whenever you've got NCAA trouble or sanctions. Is you've just got to just have a completely different attitude towards the way that you're promoting and building your program.
Well, I think that if I'm a head coach that's being interviewed for jobs, I'm using Auburn to drive up my price somewhere else.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going over to Tennessee and saying, well, you know, Auburn's offered me 5 years and 15.
Well,
I'm not planning on taking it, you know, but I'm telling other schools that this is what Auburn's offered me.
Well, you know that with Bo Jackson as part of the search committee, that might mean that he breaks your legs for
that's
playing
true.
With
if,
his emotions.
If Bo Jackson made me an offer, first of all, the fact that it's Bo Jackson, just period, but the fact that he could also break me into 1,000 pieces, I think I would just sign the contract just out of fear more than anything.
And
he'd probably be there sitting there, he'd be holding that bow like he had in the 30 for 30 on the Iron Bowl. He'd have the bow and arrows like in his arm, and he'd just slide the contract across. And he's lining up his shot to the target on the ball. So what you think of the contract?
That's actually how the Auburn's going to hire a coach. You ask me how much money it's going to be. It's actually that's the point of Bo Jackson on the search committee. It's sure. It's only for intimidation.
The muscle.
Yeah. Exactly.
Why isn't Charles Barkley on that search committee? Is it because he thought they should hire Turner Gill last time?
No, he's too busy trying to make sure that he can run for governor of the entire state of Alabama. So he.
I think Barkley should get Auburn to hire Shaq to get him off of Inside the NBA, but now we're going way off the subject.
Yeah, and now we're veering the opposite way. All right, folks, well, be sure to stick with us all through the week. We've got a Dodcast. We're going to be following conference realignment. Hey, we didn't talk about conference realignment hardly at all. Oh, yeah, a little bit.
Woo!
But we got, of course, Chris Houston will be checking in, and he will be giving us another Heisman cast, explaining a little bit of the mindset. We'll, of course, talk about the double AARP voters that Tom mentioned. And, of course, a big weekend picks panel, the last one that we will have before bowl season kicks off. So we thank you for tuning in to another Weekend Rewind. For Tom Fornelli, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.